and I'll expand on that with Bhagavad Gita, and we'll go like that, section by section. So that is going to be the overview. It's quite a bit. So in chapter 3, Krishna explained the lust covers knowledge and that ignorance binds us. He recommends Karma Yoga for attaining transcendental knowledge. Thus, after urging Arjuna to be transcendental with the help of knowledge, he now explains what that knowledge is and how it is received. So this actually clearly gives a connection between chapter 3 and chapter 4. Chapter 3 it was described.
Lust
was described towards the end. And now the covering of lust can be removed with knowledge. So Krishna is giving knowledge. So that's the reason chapter 4. That's the reason it's connecting chapter 3 to chapter 4. Now, and how to get that chapter, this transcendental knowledge, that is also described in this. So one of you, please read. Shri Krishnendra Prabhu, would you like to read the summary of first 10 verses in the handbook?
Transcendental knowledge about Krishna. As Supreme Authority, Krishna spoke this knowledge earlier to verse 1, now speaks it again to Arjuna, because Arjuna is Krishna's devotee and friend. Although Krishna is unborn, he comes into this world to re-establish religion, to protect his devotees, and to kill the demoniac. Anyone who understands this knowledge will attain love of Krishna and go back to Godhead at the end of this life.
Okay. So here, in the first section, the transcendental knowledge that is presented is the knowledge about Krishna, the understanding of Krishna. So first, Krishna gives how this knowledge was actually given to Vivaswan, the sun god. And from sun god, this knowledge was transmitted to Ikshvaku. From Ikshvaku to Manu. So he gives the parampara in which this knowledge has been spoken. So that is the first thing Krishna speaks. And Krishna makes it, Srila Prabhupada makes the point that Imam Rajashyo Viduhu, that is in the next verse it says Imam Rajashyo Viduhu, that is this, yeah, this knowledge has been, who knows this knowledge? It has been actually known and it has been practiced by kings, saintly kings. There is one reason behind that, because people follow the ruler, and if the ruler can implement this knowledge, then it is most beneficial for people in general. So that's the reason this knowledge has been given to the kings. So Vivaswan is the ruler of the sun planet, and Ikshvaku is the father of mankind, and from him to Manu and other saintly kings. So it's always in the leadership. It's always with the kings and the administrators of the world. So it is very important, because if they are in ignorance, then it is not possible for normal people to understand this knowledge and to practice. Because the ultimate aim is to deliver people from nascent and come to the path of Krishna consciousness and thus perfect the life. So that's the reason next verse it is said, Evam parampara praptam imam rajashyo viduhu sakaleneva mahata yogo nashta parantapa. But there is one important point. Even though it has been spoken to Vivaswan, it has come down in disciplic succession, it is lost now. The Mahata Yoga Nashta. So in due course of time, this knowledge has been lost. So even the transcendental knowledge can be lost, and it is lost. And it is important to know that it doesn't mean that Bhagavad Gita was lost. The text as such was there, but the right meaning was lost. We can see Srila Prabhupada actually writes this point. 5,000 years ago, it was detected by the Lord himself that the disciplic succession was broken, and therefore he declared that the purpose of Gita appeared to be lost. In the same way, at the present moment also, there are so many editions of Gita, especially in English, but almost all of them are not according to authorized disciplic succession. So what happened with the knowledge? It was lost. Krishna re-established, and it has been again lost, and Srila Prabhupada is telling, okay, I am actually presenting in English the right meaning. Okay, in Sanskrit, of course, different commentaries are there intact with untouched, but normal people do not have any access to that. So Prabhupada is saying, Bhagavad Gita accepted as it is a great boon to humanity, but if it is accepted as a treatise of philosophical speculation, it is simply a waste of time. people who study Bhagavad Gita just like that, without understanding, considering it as another speculative work, and if they don't have faith in it, then it becomes useless. It won't help. And how many years ago actually this Bhagavad Gita was spoken? Yes. And it was originally, how many years ago it was spoken?
5,000.
Originally.
40 million
years? It is not 40 million. It is 120 million, 400, roughly, at least 120 million, 400,000 years ago. Prabhupada gives a calculation. Actually, Prabhupada gives, when, because this knowledge was first to Ikshvaku, and Prabhupada gives in which yuga Ikshvaku was there, and this in the, according to this calculation, because there is one verse saying, at the beginning of Treta Yuga, Ikshvaku gave this knowledge to Manu. So according to that, actually he does the calculation and mentions at least it is 120,400,000 years ago. Bhagavad Gita was spoken originally by Krishna to Vivashwan, not to Arjuna. 120,400,000. Okay, so that is how old it is. Can you see how old it is? And it is still relevant. So that is the nature of transcendental knowledge, isn't it? Because however old it is, still it is relevant. Other books, even 20 years, it doesn't make any sense. Is it right? Whatever I have studied in my, my year 10 physics, many of these things have changed. Our textbooks have changed in 15, 20 years of time. And this is like 120 million 400,000 years back, Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita, Vivashvan, and it still is intact. And still it is going on. It is still meaningful for all of us. And all humanity actually. Next Krishna says, 4.3, why Krishna spoke this Bhagavad Gita to Arjun? Main two reasons are there. Krishna is a? Yes, and also he is a? Devotee. It's a very, very important point, because who can actually understand Bhagavad Gita? And Srila Prabhupada mentions, demoniac people, however, do not accept Lord Krishna as he is. Instead, they concoct something about Krishna and mislead general readers from the path of Krishna's instruction. Here is a warning about such misleading path. How it is a warning against misleading path? Verse number 3. Because Krishna gives the qualification who can understand Bhagavad Gita. Primarily, he has to be a devotee. He has to be a devotee. So that's the warning that Krishna has directly given. And another important thing is, another word used in 4.3 is rahasyam. Can you see the word rahasyam? Because it is a secret. So secret cannot be disclosed to anybody and everyone. Will you go to Swanson Street and call somebody and tell your personal secret? No, you won't. Because he has to be your friend, that your intimate friend. Then you can actually disclose something to him or her. So here, Krishna is making the statement, you are my friend, along with you are my devotee. So I am giving this knowledge. And of course, Krishna has in his mind that it is beneficial for the whole humanity. So that this is widely available through discussion. After saying this, there is a big contradiction here. Because Vivasvan is an old man and Krishna is so young. How old was Krishna in the battlefield of Kurukshetra? Roughly.
125
years. And how old Vivasvan? Millions. So now Arjuna is asking a question. Prabhuji, you want to read the question? What is the question that Arjuna asked? 4.4.
The son of Vivasvan is senior or what is?
Yes. So why Arjuna, being such a great devotee, he's a pure devotee, why is he asking such a question? As if he has some doubt in the whole process. For us. Yes, exactly, for us. And there is an import, okay, for us. And who will, if Arjuna asks this question, who will answer this question? Krishna himself. So that will make it most authoritative answer. So that is the reason Arjuna specifically for us asks this question. Because this is a very natural question. Who will have this question, for instance? What is the main doubting point in this? Yes, Prabhu. Yeah. Yeah, a little bit more basic. Yeah, that's the point. He doesn't forget. There's another point.
Is Krishna the original speaker?
Yeah, not exactly on that point. No, why such a question is there? Okay, this is for us. But what is the difficulty to understand this point? That is, Krishna has spoken this knowledge, this, you know, 120 million years back to a person, whereas Krishna is only now. Yeah, he is the original person, that is one point. And ultimately his body is, as Prabhu was speaking, it is not material. It's not material, or in other words, it's eternal. So that is actually the difficult part we have difficulty in understanding. If somebody has a material body, then and if he is only 125 years old, then it is not possible for him to speak 120 million years back. So here, this 125 years is just like a, you know, it's just like the sun, you know, seen for 125, you know, for 8 hours, for say after morning, and you know, after the sunrise, and you know, after 8 hours, we can say, okay, sun is there up for 8 hours. But sun is there always. The same way Krishna is there always. And it is just 125 years, it's just a manifested pastime in this material world. So to understand this point, which is a very difficult point to understand for any atheistic or any materialistic man, to clarify that point, actually, Arjuna is asking this question. So definitely it is beneficial for all of us. Yes, Prabhu.
So you just mentioned that for us,
Yeah, we can derive that point from that. Yes, we can derive that point. Yeah, Krishna, Arjuna wants to understand. But at the same time, he's actually a pure devotee. And in one sense, he's playing a position of a non-devotee, you know, who doesn't have so much of faith in the process, or who doesn't have so much of faith in the whole thing. So that's the reason, first of all, Arjuna says, no, I don't want to fight. And if you are completely convinced that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, you know, I want to fight, whatever he says, I am surrendered, then why Arjuna says, you know, I don't want to fight, first of all. So Arjuna is actually playing a role just like us. You know, he's actually showing a role as a, you know, who is somebody who is mixed with materialistic things, and, you know, just trying to answer, get all the answers. He came. Not necessarily to the earth planet, you know, to the Vivashan, so it's in the sun planet, in the sun globe he actually appeared and he actually explained. We'll see about his appearance in the same section, we'll see. And so Srila Prabhupada mentions very interesting point in the purport, same purport, that is, of course Krishna also appeared as the son of Devaki on this earth. How Krishna remained the same supreme personality of Godhead, the eternal original person, is very difficult for an ordinary man to understand. Therefore, to clarify this point, Arjuna put this question before Krishna so that he himself could speak authoritatively. So it's very important. So obviously Krishna answers the question. He says, what is Krishna's answer? Okay, I have come many times, but I can remember everything, but you can't remember everything. That is the difference between you and me. You see, Krishna had so many incarnations. Krishna had so many births. And it's like, it is considered, you know, it's like the ocean. If you go to the ocean near the beach, you can see so many waves coming. Maybe full moon day, or, you know, when it is a bit or dark, you know, sky. Sometimes in the one after another, so many waves are coming. Otherwise, it's quite dull here. When so many waves are coming, is it possible for us to count the waves? Can we have our bead bag and count 1, 2, 3, or we can have a counter? No, it's not possible to count because it's unlimited. In the same way, Krishna is saying, you know, I have unlimited births. So how is it possible for me? Well, how is it possible for you to remember all those? But I can remember everything. And it is interesting that Arjuna actually played the role as companion of Krishna in some other capacity. not necessarily as a friend, we don't know what capacity, but it is mentioned here. When Arjuna, Krishna appeared 120 million years ago, Arjuna was also there. But we don't know what the capacity. So that is different. It's not mentioned, it's Naranarayan. Okay, Naranarayan, that's right. But not necessarily that Naranarayan spoke this knowledge to Vibhishan. That's not mentioned. That's right, yes. In one occasion of his appearance, he says Naranarayan. Nara is Arjun and Narayan is Krishna. Who? What did they demonstrate? Naranarayan, actually, what they actually taught? What is the teaching of Naranarayan? Who were they? They were kings? Eh? Yogis, yeah, yogis, so sages, yeah. And what did they teach? No, what did they teach? That's not the answer. They taught renunciation. They taught renunciation. Which one? Well, I mean, the reference or the on the earth planet, of course. And it is in the they are up there, that's right. And it is in the 11th canto of Shrimad Bhagavatam. If you ask for that. So that is a good point, because we can see Arjuna and Krishna have totally different capacity altogether. You know, they were, you know, nobody could bewilder. Even the demigods couldn't bewilder Naranarayan. They sent all the different heavenly, you know, beautiful women to bewilder. Then what happened? Yeah, couldn't do nothing. No. You know, he actually sent Urvashi, isn't it? You're more beautiful. So no one can actually compete, Lord. And Srila Prabhupada mentioned another very interesting point. Because this point is very interesting. Because one who is actually a companion of the Supreme Lord, he must be a liberated person. Is there any doubt in that? Somebody is a companion of the Supreme Lord. Must be a liberated person. Can he be, you know, affected by the three modes of material nature? No. No way. Still, Krishna is making a difference between himself and Arjuna. He's separating. Okay, you are different, I am different. In this verse. You can't remember, but I can remember. So even a liberated person is not equal to the Supreme Lord. So this is actually a strong point against the Mayavad philosophy. So even somebody is liberated, he can't remember. So Arjuna can't remember. So Krishna is making that point. Alright, now in the 4.6, Krishna explained why he can remember everything. It's an important word. Ajopyavyam avyatma bhutanam ishropisan prakritim samasishtaya sambhavami atma mayaya. What's the translation? Krishna Prem Prabhu? 4.6. Important verse. Exactly. It's an night discussion. Exactly. So Krishna is, first of all, he is Aja. Still he appears. He takes birth even though he is Aja. Aja means unborn. And there is no question of deterioration of transcendental body of the Supreme Lord. Then why he comes? Or how he comes, actually. Not why. That will be explained in the next few verses. But why? How he comes? How? In, okay, one point, he comes in his own original form, that is in Surup. So when Krishna appears in the, you know, the two-handed form with his flute, with his yellow dhoti, with his peacock feather, it is the original person, how he is present in the spiritual world, in the same way he is coming down. So this is very important. So we can see Prabhupada actually explained the word nature, prakriti. Prakritim swam adhishthaya. What's the meaning of prakriti? What's the meaning of prakriti, Sai?
Isn't it nature?
Yeah, exactly. It is nature. Yeah, it is nature. Exactly. That's coming to that point. And nature, that is, Srila Prabhupada explains that nature means Swarupa. Because the Lord's actual nature is His Swarupa. So he is coming in his Swarupa, his own Rupa, to the material world.
But he also performs.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, of course. Prakriti Samphavami Atma Maya, yes. Of course. There is a very interesting thing. When we are actually born, we are in complete ignorance, naturally, now also. And but we grow, and if you see our previous photographs, you know, it's quite a bit of change in our body. And after youth means, you know, depends, maybe 25, 26, we would like to see the photographs. If you see our old photographs, we really show, okay, this is my childhood photo. This is my, you know, 15 years I was like this, 20 years I am like this, and 21, 22, 23. But after some time, we don't want to really see our photographs in terms of our beauty. Is it correct? If somebody is, you know, 80 years, who wants to see the photo? Our own photo. You go into the mirror, it's like a bit of a shock. So we want to see our photo, we want to see our picture in terms of beauty. We want to see only till a certain age. After that, we don't want to see. Or we don't have any appreciation for that. Ourselves. We don't want to see that. You can see the, you know, the flower is actually fading away slowly. So, you know, we don't appreciate after that. So actually we can see the same thing in Krishna. So that is when Krishna grows. And when he is Kishore, I mean, he's the beginning of Yavan, he doesn't grow anymore old. He can control that. We can't control that. That's the difference. So we also have the same propensity. We don't want to grow beyond that, isn't it? Before, after Yavana, we don't want to go. You know, after youth, you know, we don't want to grow old. But we are forced to. Whereas Krishna, he actually remains there. That is Nava Yavanam Cha. Is there? No problem. So that is, you know, so it is, in one sense, it's very bewildering because Krishna is actually growing. The growth itself is bewildering. For Mayavadis, if you see, the growth itself is bewildering. Because how can a spiritual body grow? If somebody, according to the, you know, according to their definition, the transcendental nature or the ultimate nature is something which doesn't change. There is no transformation. So how can the Supreme Lord, who, if we say, if he claimed it, he has got a spiritual body, how can it transform? And in the material world, when the Lord appears, actually there is a constant transformation. Just like any ordinary child. And at one point he stops. How is it possible? That in itself is very bewildering. Even Kunti Devi says the same thing in Bhagavatam. Tad atyanta vidambanam. That is, you know, the whole pastime is vidambanam. It is just bewildering. Can't understand. Yes. Absolute. Okay, who wants to answer this question? Absolute. What's the meaning of absolute? Yeah, complete is quite close. What is that? Perfect knowledge, yeah. What's the, it's easy to understand. What's the opposite of absolute? Eh? Relative. It's a good term to understand. Relative. Relative.
Relative means near that knowledge, but not
exact. Okay, we will get to that. Okay, we can talk about relative knowledge and absolute knowledge. Or relative fact and absolute fact. What is relative fact? I am a human. Is it an absolute fact or a relative fact? It's a relative fact. Can you understand? Because eternally I cannot say I am a human. This body at this point, under constraint, the fine lines are there. The fine tips are there underneath. When we define, we make a statement. That is relative. Conditions apply. Many conditions apply. If you buy something, you know, especially if we go for a phone plan or something, you know, there will be big, first there will be a nice deal will be there, underneath there will be, small letter, there will be conditions will be there, 10 conditions will be there. People won't even read, they will sign up for the contract, and after that when the bill comes, they will understand that. Another relative facts, they will come to know more and more. So that is, relative. In this world, the facts of this world are relative. That is not absolute in the sense, it doesn't have existence for eternity. It has a relative existence, but it doesn't have absolute eternal existence. When we say Krishna is the Supreme Lord, it has eternal. It's an eternal fact. It's always true. We are spirit soul. That is always true. That is absolute. So the knowledge which is coming from Bhagavad Gita, it is absolute because it doesn't change. Absolute means there is no change. Krishna has any change? Krishna, we say, becomes any time human being? No. Do we become Supreme Lord at any point of time? No. So this is absolute fact. No change. We are always servants of Krishna. Jivara Sarupa Goy Krishna era Nitya Das. Eternal servant of Krishna. Can we change that? We would like to, but we can't. So this is absolute fact. This is absolute. You understand the term? Absolute. We can't change it. That's it. Yeah, here in the surrender to me offers, as Prabhu was mentioning, this point is mentioned that Krishna's form and descriptions are given by Srila Prabhupada. That is, he is having a peacock feather, he is wearing a yellow dhoti, etc. This description of the Lord is given to define, okay, he is a person. Come on, he has these features. Though it's not material, he has all these features. So, the whole Mayavad, the whole light concept is denied in this verse as well. Okay, now which are the next two verses? Verse number? Which verse are we at?
6.
Yeah, 7 and 8. Did we touch upon 7 and 8 before? Yes or no? Yes, no, I don't know. Three answers are there. Yes. Okay. In which context we actually discussed?
Keywords.
Okay, keywords. Other context. Why we discuss this actually? This 7 and 8. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharada apyatanava dharmasya sudatmanam sudhyamiham paritranaya sadhunamina shayacha dushkrudam dharma samstavanarthaya sampavami yuge yuge. Why did we discuss these two words? Anyone remember? In relation to what? Yeah, why the Lord comes to this world, that's the discussion of this point. And also we were discussing Sanatana Dharma. So in the context of Sanatana Dharma, we actually discussed these two verses. Of course, why Lord appears, that comes in that context. So why the Lord comes here? Or when, first, when Lord comes here? Not the discrete points, exactly, sentence, yes, true. Okay. Exactly. That's a good point. That is why he comes. That's right. And when he comes? When there is? When there is irreligion. Of religion, then he comes. And the reason is what Prabhu says, that we already discussed. Two reasons Prabhu exactly pointed out. What are those? Paritranaja, protection of the devotees, and Vinashaya. So it's clear. Yes, Prabhu.
Basically, there is only one reason why Krishna comes, that is just to deliver the five members. If you analyze the mystery, and even his energies are enough, the time.
Good. So that is the most intimate reason that Prabhu was building. It's internal. So that is a very, very close reason why Krishna appears. That is to give association to his devotees. Why he has to give association to his devotees?
Increase the love.
Increase the love. Yeah. Yeah, people are harassed by demoniac people. Yes, that is the reason. Then, a little bit more. So think from the devotee point of view. You have pure devotee. Yeah. Yes, they are in separation actually. They are in separation and they want to associate with the Supreme Lord. So actually to give the association in that sense, because they are actually burning in the fire of separation. So to extinguish that fire, the Lord appears. So in that way the Lord is giving association to his devotees. So that is the ultimate reason. Of course the other reasons are reasons that are worth pointing in nature, external and internal. That is, one is a little bit external. Yes, that's right. And the most internal, most near, very, very intimate reason. That is, he wants to give association to his devotees, intimate devotees, who are waiting. And it is mentioned that they know nothing but Krishna. You know, they are not bothered about demons as such. Their main concern is not demons. Their main concern is Krishna. So, for them to give the audience, the Lord appears. Next verse. That is Janma, Karma, Chamya, Divyam. So this is also a key memorizing verse. Who remember the verse or translation after? Okay. Verse, yeah.
Janma, Karma, Chamya, Divyam.
Okay, very good. Who knows the translation?
Krishna says, my birth and my activities are pure, so I don't attempt
to
it's not easy to understand by anything material. For person who can understand, he can get over this.
Very good. Exactly, touching the point. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, nice. So that's the meaning actually. It's true.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the point. So, Janma and Karma are divyam. It's transcendental. His birth and activities are transcendental. So which is, you know, and Hanu can know, as Prabhu was pointing out, he can go to which birth can he go?
Eternal abode.
Yeah, eternal abode. So it's a good deal, isn't it? And in 4:10, Krishna says, Krishna mentions actually that so many people have already achieved transcendental love unto him. Many, Krishna says, you know, many, it's not just one person or two people, many people have already achieved love for Krishna. So Krishna says, being freed from attachment, fear and anger, being fully absorbed in me and taking refuge in me, many, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me. And thus they are attained transcendental love for me. Yes, Prabhu. Yeah, to establish the, yes, of course. Yeah, Paritranaya Sadhana, Vinashayacha, Dushkrita, Dharma Samsara, and also to re-establish the religious principles. Yeah, that is the reason. He does that, Krishna does that. Good. So this verse actually makes it very clear what's the meaning of transcendental knowledge. What transcendental knowledge, jnana, it is talking about so far, 1 till 9, and then it is sort of concluding this particular section. So what is the transcendental knowledge Krishna is speaking about? Yeah, it is. Of course, but it is a knowledge about Krishna and his activities. you know, it talks about his birth and his activity. So that is the transcendental knowledge that is specifically mentioned in this section. It's not exactly the gyan that is, you know, what the usually gyan, what does that refer to? Brahma gyan, Brahma jyoti. So it's not exactly speaking about that gyan, which we usually call gyani, means, you know, who knows, I am not the body, I am the spirit soul, and there is a supreme spirit, you know, the Brahma. So that kind of gyan is not presented in this first 10 verses, rather it is presented Krishna, the knowledge about Krishna. Also it is the vigyan. So in this 410, one very interesting point that we can see which connect to the previous one is, previously we talked about covering by the lust and the ignorance, covering by the lust in the third chapter. Here it is mentioned, many persons have actually purified, Puta Madhava Magata. Puta means purified, by knowledge of me. So we can see exactly the pointing out, Krishna is actually connecting. Where one time it is, you know, the covering is avritam jnanam etena, the knowledge of the living entity is being covered by the lust, that is mentioned in the third chapter. Now Krishna is exactly telling the opposite thing, that is purified by knowledge about me, Uda madhava magata, that is purified because of my knowledge, this knowledge about me, and then madhava magata. And it is coming to the next level where one is actually getting the absorption in Krishna. Madhava means transcendental love for me. So can we see, you know, in the third chapter end, Krishna is giving the problems, and of course the solution is there. But here is giving a full package of solution. That is knowledge about Krishna, his birth, knowledge about his pastimes, activities, names, etc., form, etc., the whole thing Krishna is giving. And with that actually one can get purified and develop love for him. So that is the end of section 1 of chapter 4. Now we are moving to the next section. That are verses from 11 till 15. Which one? Oh, okay. Middle, I think I haven't
said.
Yeah. Yes. Maybe rather I should look in the book.
The last
slide.
In
this second. No, it's in there. It's after the verse?
Yes, before the verse.
Okay, one has to get rid of all three stages of attachment to the material world: negligence of spiritual life, fear of spiritual personal identity, and the conception of void that arises from frustration in life. To get free from these three stages of material concept of life, one has to take the complete shelter of the Lord, guided by the bona fide spiritual master, and follow discipline and regulative principles of devotional life. Now, this last stage of devotion is called bhava, or transcendental love of Godhead. Okay. Now, why Prabhupada makes this point. One is beginning of the verse itself is saying Vita Raga Bhaya Krodha. So beginning Vita Raga, Raga means attachment. Then Bhaya. Okay, so that is the first point Prabhupada mentioned. One is three stages of attachment is explained. Then it is negligence of spiritual life. What is the meaning of negligence of spiritual life? Yeah, it is born of, actually it is a little bit explained before. If I read further, it's explained a little bit before, is it right?
Yes.
I read from a little bit further, then you will understand. Okay, we'll go through the purport, and then because it is explained a little bit before, better to, I think, use this. As described above, it is very difficult for a person who is too materially affected to understand the personal nature of the Supreme Absolute Truth. Generally, people who are attached to the bodily conception of life are so absorbed in the materialism that it is almost impossible for them to understand how the Supreme can be a person. Such materialists cannot even imagine that there is a transcendental body which is imperishable, full of knowledge and eternally blissful. In the materialistic concept, the body is perishable, full of ignorance and completely miserable. Therefore, people in general keep the same body idea in mind when they are informed of the personal form of the Lord. For such materialistic men, the form of the gigantic material manifestation is supreme. Can you understand that point? That is sort of gigantic material. We also have that Virat Roop concept is there. That is identifying the whole material creation as the Supreme Lord, because they can't understand the spiritual body of the Lord. So consider the whole material creation itself as the Supreme Lord, because they cannot conceive the idea of spiritual body. Many people have difficulty in understanding when we speak about a spiritual body such as Ananda Vigraha. Very difficult to understand. How is it possible to have a spiritual body? So for them, this gigantic creation, the whole material universe, okay, this itself is the Lord. Understand, this is Lord. Whatever you are saying, that is Lord. People say, no, nature. We believe in nature. Okay, so that is nature. So it's considered, so this is for less intelligent people. Now, consequently, they consider the Supreme to be impersonal. Okay, the idea behind that is, if the Lord is spread everywhere, then it has to be impersonal. Because if you look at the world, you cannot see any personality as such. So consequently, they consider the Supreme to be impersonal. Now, and because they are too materially absorbed, the conception of retaining the personality after liberation from the matter frightens them. Is it clear at that point? Since they are so materially absorbed, because a material body means suffering. So if we get liberation and still having a body means further suffering. So I don't want a body. That is a fear, actually. When they are informed that spiritual life is also individual and personal, they become afraid of becoming personal again, and so they naturally prefer a kind of merging into impersonal world. Can you see? So these are actually explanation actually leading to the, you know, the three statements actually coming. So that's why I'm reading this. Okay. Generally, they compare the living entities to the bubbles of the ocean which merge into the ocean. That is the highest perfection of spiritual existence attainable without individual personality. Can you see the Mayavadis? If you ask Mayavadis what is the ultimate, they will give the example. There is a drop of ocean and there is ocean. You go to the beach, you take one cup of water, you know, pour that water into the ocean. So mix everything together. So that is the ultimate. Merging is the ultimate. This is a kind of fearful stage of life, devoid of perfect knowledge of spiritual existence. Can you see that fear element in? Because there is still that fear element is there, because they are fearful about the personality. So when Krishna is saying Vita Raga Bhaya Krodha, actually Prabhupada is explaining that fear to another degree. Okay, we can see the material fear on a normal level, because our life is, you know, so many different kinds of fear. And if you don't know what is fear, we can see how many different ways are we trying to defend ourselves. So many different kinds of defensive mechanism that we have. Do we defend with our words? Let somebody, you know, criticize you on your face, you know, tell something bad about you on your face. Prabhu, you haven't done that wrong, correctly. Middle, no, it's because of that. No, it's because of the other reason. We are trying to defend, actually. Defense is because of fear. Even to a slightest degree, if you are trying to defend, actually, it's because of fear. But of course, we can use that defending mechanism to defend for the devotees and defending for Krishna and for Shastra. That we can do. But otherwise, defense is actually materialistic nature. It's the second nature, Bhagavatam says. It's the second nature of living being. Defense. Bhayam dhitiya apinivesa. That's the second nature. Now, Prabhupada is actually bringing that fear to another level. That is fear of identity. Fear of having a personal form. So that is the fear that the impersonal self. So one has to give up that also. Another interesting point. We went to that aquarium. And aquarium, we can see so many fishes, so many aquatics, so many different forms. And it's quite beautiful. Have you gone to aquarium here? Melbourne Aquarium? Did you go to Shannon? Good? Really good, you know, very impressive. But if you see different species, different aquatics, there is a list. Most of them are poisonous. Most of the fishes are poisonous. That is the defensive mechanism. Even though it looks beautiful, most of them are poisonous. You can even kill man. You know, who is that famous person who was actually killed? Yeah. So many kinds of, that's all, you know, it is given how, what is the defense mechanism. If you go to aquarium, you see in front of each species there is a list. What is its defensive mechanism and how it works. So in the animal life, we can see the fear is like extreme. This animal, these fishes, they are actually trying to kill other small fishes and worm and eat. And at the same time, bigger fishes are trying to kill them and eat. So this is a fear, you know, see the, in the animal kingdom, you know, how the fear factor is, how severe it is. Anytime we can be killed. For us, we don't worry about, you know, killing, at least here. Maybe in the battlefield, few people worry about that. You know, either be killed or, you know, kill somebody else. But we don't worry about that. So the fear. So this is our lower level of fear. And on a higher level, even the spiritual progress, the fear is coming to the platform about the identity. About one's personal identity. So the Prabhupada is actually cutting that point as well here. This is a kind of fearful stage of life devoid of perfect knowledge of spiritual existence. Furthermore, there are many persons who cannot understand spiritual existence at all, being embarrassed by so many theories and contradictions of various types of philosophical speculation. They become disgusted or angry and foolishly conclude that there is no supreme cause and that everything is ultimately void. Such people are in a diseased condition of life. Some people are too materially attached and therefore do not give attention to spiritual life. Some of them want to merge into the supreme spiritual cause, and some of them disbelieve in everything, being angry of all sorts of spiritual speculation out of hopelessness. This last class of men take to the shelter of some kind of intoxication, and their effective hallucinations are sometimes accepted as a spiritual mission. Okay. As Prabhu Vishnu Maharaj was telling in the early stage when he was preaching in England, they had a devotee along with them, so they went, they made a, you know, set up a preaching center, and they went and started preaching. So they went they started living in a youth hostel kind of thing, and they wanted to do program there. So they started living there and, you know, mixing with those people, cooking with them, offering prasad and doing kirtan and giving lecture. You know, it's a hippie, basically a hippie accommodation. So Maharaj was there, another two devotees were there. So they were all practicing devotees. One of them, actually, they were from this other devotee, they were from the LSD background. He was also hippie. And he became a devotee. And then again, he associated with, for the preaching sake, he started associating with this hippie camp. And he took LSD again. And after that, because he knew philosophy, he started saying, you know, I am seeing the blue boy everywhere, and, you know, I am in, you know, I am in prema, you know, the whole thing came. And he left. So this is, you know, this is a problem. So some people, even LSD, they used to tell Prabhupada, we can go higher and higher. So what did Prabhupada say? Stay high forever. When he presented Krishna consciousness, he said, stay high forever. Because you had to come down. In LSD, you had to go up and then come down. Prabhupada said, okay, stay high forever in Krishna consciousness. Then, one has to get rid of all three kinds of attachment to the material world. Why now Prabhupada is telling one has to give all three kinds of attachment to the material world? Is it already explained? Prabhupada, already we explained in detail. So then Prabhupada is summarizing these points. Negligence of the spiritual life, that is foolish. Fear of spiritual personality, that is specifically pointing to impersonalists, Mayavadis. And finally, the conception of void that arises from the frustration in life. Is it clear, Prabhuji? Okay, so that is actually the three points are explained before. That is a, actually the continuation of the purport. So if you read from the beginning, then you will understand. Okay, then. Okay, so that part is clear. So we had to go for the next. We had to go a bit for. Next section is very interesting. Okay. Okay, Vijay Prabhu, if you want to read the summary of this from the handbook of the section 2 of chapter 4. Summary from the handbook, section 2, verses from 11 to 15.
After losing knowledge about himself, this leads to liberation. Krishna explains how he is the ultimate soul of all paths and how everyone is dependent on him to seek solution in his interest. He has created the one ashrama system, whereby men can fulfill their true desires and make all the soul of liberation.
Okay. Good. So here very important things. One, first the beginning of the verse itself is very important. That is ye yathamam prapatyante tam tadeva bhajamiham mam vartmani vartante manushya partha sarvasya. So this is actually the reciprocal law. How Krishna reciprocates is this? Devotees as well as non devotees, everyone. As all surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follow my path in all respects. O son of Ritha. So the point is, everyone is actually searching for Krishna. How can we understand that? Everyone is searching for Krishna. Or if you say, everyone is surrendering unto Krishna, how can we understand? Okay. Yes, that's a good point. So how can we reconcile the fact, okay, Brahman, Paramatman and Bhagavan, these three different levels of realizations are there. And how can, if somebody who is after Brahman, then how can we understand he is also actually searching for Krishna?
This is both. This is both, okay,
that's right, yeah. But still, how can we understand he is searching for Krishna? Exactly, that's the point. So this is, we are talking about Advaya Gyan. Advaya means known different. So even if you are talking about Brahman, even if you are talking about Bhagavan, even if you are talking about Paramatma, these are all the features of Bhagavan. It's all three different aspects of the same Supreme Lord. All three things are same aspect of different features of Krishna. So in that sense, even if somebody is going to surrender unto Brahman, still ultimately he is actually searching for Krishna. It's one feature of Krishna he is searching for, in that sense. And if he is looking for Paramatma, still it's another feature of Krishna. They are not separate from Krishna, as Prabhu was pointing out. It's a very important point. They are not separate from Krishna. As Bhagavad Gita itself says, you know, Brahmanohi Pradishtaham Amrita Shashvata Secha. That is, the Brahman is placed, it is resting upon Krishna himself. So if somebody is after Brahman, yes, ultimately he is looking for Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada actually brings this to a very higher level. He says, even in the transcendental realm, in the spiritual world, there also this principle is equally applicable. We see, Ethamam Prabhupada Tam Tadheva Bhajamiham. That as we surrender, Krishna reciprocates. So, okay, in the material world, for different transcendentalists, we can see Krishna reciprocates in this way. And not only that, in the devotees in the spiritual world, the same principle applies. So when, can anyone give an example for that? As one desires, in the same way Krishna reciprocates. this principle, can we apply in the spiritual world? Yes, it is said, okay, we can apply this principle in the spiritual world. But can you give an example to this? Okay, Vaikuntha, that is, yes, one example. Yes. Anything else? It can be more specific rather than just sailing Vaikuntha in terms of personality, because when we talk about surrender or when we talk about desire, means it is of the individual. So give individual example and how Krishna reciprocates in the spiritual world. Okay, different relationships the Lord has with his devotees. Yes, an example to that. Yes, Yashodamai, Arjun. Yes, gopis. So they have different desires, they have different kinds of surrender unto Krishna, and Krishna is reciprocating. So this verse from Bhagavad Gita is, you know, from one level to the other level, it is applicable everywhere. It is applicable to us also. Then how about a materialistic person? How this principle can be applied? He is not a devotee of Krishna, he is drinking and dancing. So how can you apply this? Yeah, okay, that's good. So he has a desire and he is surrendering unto whom? Exactly, which is under Krishna. Krishna's another energy. So surrendering unto Krishna's another energy, that's all. So in that sense, so it's a direct and there is indirect surrender. There is direct surrender and there is indirect. That is through material energy. Drinking and dancing means, yes, you will get another reward for that.
So the point there is,
in the material world, what you said is right, the different degrees of surrender. In the spiritual world, that surrender is in different ways. You understand? It's in different ways. That's the reason we are talking about different relationships. We don't say Yashodama is not a pure devotee, only, you know, gopis are pure devotees. We don't say like that. Even though philosophically we do classify, you know, we say this is higher, okay, this is this level, this is less intimate. We do all this kind of calculation and we analyze everything. When the great devotees, they analyze, they have analyzed and they have given it to us, and we say, yes, there are different levels, etc. But all are pure. All are dependent on their eternal nature, their eternal surrender, their eternal desire to serve Krishna in a particular way. And that is manifested to its perfection. So that is spiritual life. That is spiritual world. So yes, there is a difference in that sense. Then even in the material world, when according to the surrender, Krishna reciprocates, yes. Then one has become purified completely, then even in the material world, for such a pure devotee, that particular kind of relationship manifests. So, that variety can be there in the material world also, because they are not really in the material world and they are not really affected by the material mode, such devotees who are pure. They have eternal relationship. It's an eternal relationship, means, you know, it is there always. That is their nature. Can you ask how the sugar is sweet? Whenever sugar is there, the sugar is sweet. If sugar is there, the sugar is sweet. That's it.
But what we are having the.
So we cannot say Krishna gave Yashodamai that love. Yashodamai is there for eternally.
That's it. When she has come down, and again we'll go back same position in the spiritual world.
And if you are talking about eternal associates, they are there in the spiritual world always. they are not, you know, coming back and going back, you know, then there were empty space, you know, the Nanda Maharaj's house is empty now because the pastimes are running here, you know, then they are going back, you know, it's not exactly like that. This is a completely spiritual situation altogether. So whenever the living entities are there, that time itself they have that relationship with the Lord. And especially we are talking about the eternal associates of the Lord. So it means the relationships are eternally present. What was that few eternal things that we discussed before? Anyone can remember? Yeah, not exactly on that. Dham. Then? Sanatana Dharma, then Sanatana Dham, then what else? Anyone remember? Sanatana Dharma, of course, is Sanatana, means eternal occupation. That's what we call it, like eternal occupation. So, what is Yashodamma's eternal occupation? Mother of Krishna.
Ourselves
also the same problem,
but whatever
the
previous relation,
the
eternal relation,
yeah,
the same way we are
developing our desire in due course of time. Which one? Can you remember? I can't remember from what. Sanatana Dharma, Sanatana Dham, I can remember. Then Sanatana, what else? Okay, basically the living entities are eternal, the Supreme Lord is eternal, their relationship is eternal, and the award of the Lord is also eternal. These are the four eternals. Now, we don't have a lot of time. That is the sad part. Shall we go with full force? Okay. So I'll briefly explain another point which is interesting. How, again, regarding the same verse, how it's given in Sanran to me, it's a nice analysis, how Krishna reciprocates according to this verse to different jnanis. Quickly I'll tell. The jnanis who are of Mayavad nature, what do they do? Do they accept Krishna's eternal form? No. So to them, what Krishna gives, even though they are going to the strict practice of different disciplines of philosophical speculation, but what Krishna gives? Krishna reciprocates by giving repeated birth in the material world again and again, so that they can suffer continuously. Okay, so that is the reciprocation of the Lord. Okay, now, the jnanis who accept the eternal form of the Lord, but still they are ready to serve Krishna, but what they want is, they want to get Brahman realization. To them, Krishna gives Brahmananda. He gives the Brahman realization. Yeah, the knowledge of Brahman. That's it. And for the devotees, ultimately he gives prema. Okay, which is the eligibility to go back. So that's another application of the same verse, how Krishna reciprocates with everyone. And for us also, it's another point to understand, it's according to our desire and surrender. Krishna reciprocates. If you don't have the right desire in our spiritual life, because people often, when they come to Krishna consciousness, they think, okay, we shouldn't have any desire. Okay, it's true for material desire, but they think spiritually also we shouldn't have any desire. So which is not right. So we should have spiritual ambitions, we should have spiritual desires, then Krishna will fulfill. So that is also a very important point that we can understand from this verse. Alright, we should go ahead. Can anyone read the translation for the next verse?
Men in this world do not succeed in good activities, and therefore they worship the demigods. If you, of course, can be freedom from good evil, please go.
Alright. So it is talking about the demigod. Can you close it? Pull that string. No, pull that string. Only one of the strings. Maybe I should change my seat. So according to the previous verse, Krishna can give everything. Is it right? As we surrender, Krishna reciprocates. Then why do we have to go about and worship? I mean, everyone can approach actually Krishna. Even Bhagavatam also we know. If you want material desires, go to Krishna. If you want Brahman realization, go to Krishna. If you want Paramatma realization, go to Krishna. If you want Krishna, go to Krishna. everything go to Krishna. So is that all? The whole, we always preach, it's a one-stop shopping. So why then there is demigod worship is given? Next verse, immediately after this, Krishna is telling about demigod worship. The reason is Kshipramhi Manushe Loke. That Kshipram means immediately. Krishna will not give immediately things. So it is Krishna will give only if it is actually very good for you, Krishna will give. And also even if we give you material desires, if you satisfy your material desires still, Krishna will make sure that you will not ask that again. How is that? Krishna will give you whatever you ask. Okay, Krishna may give you. If you ask for BMW, Krishna may give you. But you will never ask that again. How is that? You say, no, I don't want any more BMW. By mistake I asked, I got, but I don't want that anymore. You are purified from that desire. How is it?
You are liberated from that desire
at least. You may have something else, but at least from that you have complete liberation. You want that. So that is purification. So Krishna gives that purification. How is it? Is it a good deal?
Never ask a wife for
something. So that is the reason. Okay. So got that point? So that is demigod worship is there. Very nice opportunity. Those who want Kshipram Manushe, okay, we will get in the material world, yes, we will get the results immediately without much difficulty. You have to follow some rules and regulations and you will get, okay, whatever is required. So it's there. Also, Prabhu has mentioned the point. One who considers the Lord Krishna and the demigods of equal status, then they are called Pashandi. Pashandi means something like an atheist or like a very strong word. Pashandi, that's it. I remember I was reading one of the reply by Jayadeva Maharaj to one letter by one scholarly person. So it was a response. So Maharaj writes very heavy. Obviously, he speaks and writes quite heavy. So, this was in the Back to Godhead magazine. They had a series on Lord Shiva, a series of articles on Lord Shiva. Of course, Lord Shiva is Vaishnava Ananda Sachambu as the greatest devotee, not as a supreme lord. And it actually created a bit of stir in other learned community, not just the local people, the scholars of Hinduism in different universities and stuff like that in the West. And they actually wrote few letters to Back to Godhead to the BBT, and one of the reply Maharaj actually published one of his reply to one letter as a reply to this argument. And Maharaj was using heavy terms. So one of the verse was this verse actually, which actually tells the one who considers the Supreme Lord and the demigods to be equal, they are considered Pashandi. This is one of the answer. Maharaj explained, this is given in Shastra because this was actually quoted. This verse was quoted in the Back to Godhead actual original articles. Then Maharaj is telling the fact, this is from Padma Purana. Okay, this is a fact. So we are actually, this is true. And Maharaj was very strongly giving, 1, 2, 3, like there are so many reasons against this, just smashing it completely. So it's a very powerful statement. You had to use it very carefully. Yes, Prabhu. Not fraud, atheist, from atheist. Complete atheist who doesn't believe in God or anything. Okay. Hmm. Now Krishna is actually telling, I am not very responsible for your suffering or your pain or your whatever you are going through. Krishna is actually going behind now. So far Krishna said, I reciprocate as a surrender. But now Krishna is telling, now there is something else also. So that is the next verse is very important. That is Chaturvarnyam Maya Krishna Guna Karma Vibhagasya. Then Katara Vima Akatara Avyaya. So what does that mean? Amal goes in the roof.
And the work has been created then. The four divisions of human society are created by me. And although I am the creator of the system, you should know that I am yet a non-dual being consciousness.
Yes. So the tendency of a man towards work, we have different tendencies towards work. Is it right? Some people write, don't mind to sit in front of a computer for 12 hours a day. For some people it is hellish. Some people don't mind working, you know, whole day outside, physical work. Some people who are good businessmen. So what that determines, how one develops that inclination towards particular kind of work, that is dependent on which mode is one person situated in. Depending on that, one develops a particular tendency towards particular work. So it can be anything. So that reason there is Chaturvarnyam and Guna Karma Vibhagasya. The Varnas, you know, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Varnas, it's Guna and Karma, it is Vibhagasya, it is classified according to Guna and Karma. That's the activities and the quality one has accurately. Due to the different conditioning, it's actually a conditioned nature. Whichever mode one is a conditioned nature after all. And that is accurate. And now we are manifesting. We all have different kinds of tendencies and we actually manifest in our day-to-day life. It's a very logical system if you think about it. It's very logical. Because naturally we have a tendency to follow something, some kind of work. And it has been already classified according to different, you know, four divisions, that's all. And of course, now it doesn't really fit in because in the Kali Yuga we are in the mixed modes. And we ourselves, we don't know which mode we are in. Sometimes, you know, going up and down, it is changing all the time. So it's a bit hard. Still, to some degree, we can say, okay, which mode we are in. It's possible to say. And previously, it was quite obvious. The modes were quite predominant. People had pretty much a predominant mode. And they used to manifest those characteristics to a great degree. So, it was very easy to place them in different varnas. Now, there's a bit of change. Anyway, training is there. And this is actually about Varnashram. What is the purpose of Varnashram? We have already discussed. What is the purpose of Varnashram? Tell me, what is the purpose? Gradual elevation to? Yes. And Krishna here is mentioning that although I am the creator of the system, you should know that I am the undoer, being unchangeable. Krishna is the creator, but Krishna is not transformed or changed in any way. How is it possible? If you do something, will there be any change in us? Yes. Any activity you take, if I push this for instance, still there has to be some reaction, some activity going on in my body because I am doing something. But for Krishna, Krishna has created the whole system of Varnashram. Still he is telling, I am unchangeable and undoer, I am not doing anything. Why? Huh? Yeah, he is aloof. He has nothing to do with the materialistic activity because he is completely situated in the transcendence. He is completely spiritual. So Varnashram system is, as such Varnashram system is spiritual of material. Material, so it comes from him. Krishna makes it more clear. Next verse. 4:14. There is no work that affects me, nor do I aspire for the fruits of action. One who understands this truth about me also does not become entangled in the fruitive reactions of work. So the Lord is not subjected to the law. The king can create so many laws and he can implicate so many people for not following the law, but the king himself, not necessarily that he has to follow that rule. He is above that. He is the creator, but he is above that. The same way Krishna is above the rules of material nature, even though he is the creator. So he doesn't follow. He comes to set an example, as we studied in 3rd chapter, Yat Yat Acharati Sreshtha. So in the same way, Krishna, to set an example, he sometimes follows, or many times he follows the rules and regulations. But sometimes he doesn't follow. Or many times he doesn't follow. That is up to him. Because he is unaffected by any of these rules and regulations. He is beyond that. It's not going to bind him in any way. So for our actions and our reactions, who is responsible? Only us. Very bad. Very difficult truth. But that is a fact. So Krishna has actually said, you know, I am not. He has given up. He said, no, I am unaffected by any of those things. It is only you. Next verse is connected. All the liberated souls in the ancient times acted with this understanding of my transcendental nature. Therefore, you should perform your duty following in the footsteps. Can you see the instruction to Arjuna? This knowledge, that is knowledge about Krishna. He is the creator, but he is unchangeable and he is non-doer. With this knowledge, that is taking one's own responsibility, now Arjuna should fight. That's the instruction by Krishna. So after giving this instruction, now we are going to the next section. That is a long section, that is 16 till 24. So Krishna is telling about Karma Yoga. Now it is again, he is coming to the Karma Yoga.
Okay. Manipur, you want to read the summary of Karma Yoga, third section? Okay.
After explaining this transcendental position, Krishna analyzes and describes how to perform activities of the transcendental person.
Yeah. So in this section, first of all, Krishna explains what is karma, what is karma, and what is vikarma. All three are important. Akarma is? Yeah, inaction, that is devotional service. And vikarma is? And karma is? Good action. And it's also said one can see action in inaction and inaction in action. So what is the meaning of action in inaction? Yeah. Oh no, tell me, what is the meaning of it? Explain the meaning of action in inaction. Action in inaction. Okay, first tell me, what is inaction?
Inaction is devotional service.
Okay, inaction is devotional service. Then how can you see action in devotional service?
We are performing our prescribed duties, but for the pleasure of
the Supreme. Exactly. So there is action. In devotional service, there are actions. Do we do any action in our devotional service? Mm-hmm. What do we do? Exactly. Chanting is an action. Chanting. So we do action. So that is action in inaction. And what is inaction in action? I think we missed. What is inaction in action?
Read
the verse. Sorry. One who sees inaction in action, action in inaction, is intelligent among men, and is in rational position, although engaged in all sorts of activities. What is action in inaction then? Okay, we described the first part. So what is action in inaction? Who does inaction? Any clue? Inaction means no activity. Who does no activity? Jnanis do inaction. Thus is a Mayava Sanyasi, no activity. But there is action in that inaction. That's what Krishna is saying. What is that action in that inaction?
Mind.
One point. Mind, one has to deal with the mind. Then and the senses. Exactly, they had to sustain themselves. So there has to be some action. And those actions, there is no spiritual basis for that action. For devotees, everything can be utilized in service of Krishna. But for them, there is no spiritual basis for this activity. So that is action in inaction. It means they had to incur reaction for that action in inaction. Can you see the point? Because since they had to be active with the mind and the body to a certain degree, to that degree they had to get reaction. Is that point clear? Or any questions? Not clear? Not inaction in inaction.
Inaction
in
action.
Okay.
Is the devotion
okay. Yes. What is Vikarma first of all? Yeah. And what is karma? Good activities, prescribed duties. So not necessary that it is inaction. It's not necessary that it is devotional service. We can do so many duties in Varnashram Dharma, which is karma, which is good action. We can dig a well, it's karma. We can give in charity, normal charity, we can feed poor people, that is? Yeah, that is pious. What do you call it in Sanskrit? It is karma. Okay, sakarma, if you want to add that word, but at least karma, it is karma. And what is vikarma? You kick somebody, that is a vikarma. Isn't it? So that is vikarma. And what is akarma? That is, yeah, so akarma, literal translation of akarma is
no reaction.
And also it is inactivity in that sense, because it doesn't create any reaction. So that is devotional service. Now from there, is that part clear? Amal goes from the blue. It's a three thing. Usually people get confused mainly with karma. So karma, when they say, they don't know whether it's good or bad. So here in this context, that karma means good activity. Is that point clear? Vikarma is obvious because that V is there. It becomes very obvious. And akarma, no reaction, no action. So that is it from this three things are given. Yeah. Which one? Action in
reaction.
Yeah, that's right.
Can you please
repeat? Yeah, go and repeat that.
Which one is the action in inaction?
Yeah, go into that. A person acting in Krishna consciousness is naturally free from the bonds of karma. His activities are all performed for Krishna, therefore he does not enjoy or suffer any of the effects of work. Consequently, he is intelligent in human society, even though he is engaged in all sort of all activities for Krishna. Is that okay? We are reading from the, what is that? 18. Of course, I am reading 18. Is it clear? There it is. Because action in action and inaction in action. The same thing we are actually going through. So what do you classify this part?
Action
and inaction. What is your opinion? Everyone says, is it action and inaction or inaction and inaction?
Inaction.
inaction.
Yes. What is that inaction?
Devotion service.
Inaction. Because even though the action is going on, still it is actually inaction.
Devotion.
Exactly. So it is inaction in
action.
Action in that sense. Inaction in action. So the action is going on, but still it's inaction. Then now we are coming to the next, because the impersonal sees all fruitive activities out of fear, so that the resultant action may not be a stumbling block on the path of self-realization. But the personalist knows rightly his position as eternal serviator of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay, so they are stopping all the activities. So in other words, what is that? It is action in inaction. Because there is action. Even though apparently they are inactive, because they are renounced, they are inactive in that sense, still there is action, and so there is reaction as well. So that there is action in inaction. And the first one was inaction in action.
Action in inaction.
It can be in the mode of goodness, and it can degrade also to mode of passion. Because if they had, that's what Prabhupada is telling, if they are trying to restrain the senses, and if they have to use the senses, since there is no spiritual understanding, they have to use the senses for sense gratification. So it can become in the mode of passion. And now this verse actually gives very, very important information regarding a karma yogi. That it's actually the 19th verse. One is understood to be in full knowledge, whose every endeavor is devoid of desire for sense gratification. He is said by sages to be a worker for whom the reaction of work have been burned up by the fire of perfect knowledge. So the point is, a karma yogi is working. At the same time, he is not working for? Exactly. So that's a very important point. Because he is in knowledge. Next, abandoning all attachment to the result of his activities, ever satisfied and independent, he performs no fruitive actions, although engaged in all kinds of undertakings. Okay? He is performing all kinds of undertakings, but he performs no fruitive actions. Sign of a karma yogi. Such a man, next 21. Such a man of understanding acts with mind and intelligence perfectly controlled, gives up all sense of proprietorship over his possessions, and acts only for the bare necessities of life. Thus working, he is not affected by sinful reactions. Yes, it's all karma yogi. So Prabhupada explained this one. He moves exactly like a part of a machine. As a machine part requires oiling and cleaning for maintenance, so a Krishna conscious man maintains himself by his work, just to remain fit for action in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Even for a machine, you need some maintenance. You need to oil it, make it work properly. In the same way, the body needs maintenance. So a devotee also works in the same way. Karma yogi works in the same way. Any questions so far? We had a guy. It's a bit intricate. At this point, you can consider both are same at this point. But we have to get into the intricacies, a little bit more intricacies of that. Not yet. See, when 22 is actually giving the characteristics of a karma yogi, it's a nishkama karma yogi. Nishkama karma yogi means not at all attached to the results of his activities. So further classification is given in 22 to the results of the activities. Yeah. Now on verse 23, it's actually giving a glimpse of yajna. Yajna means activities for the satisfaction of Krishna ultimately. But there are different kinds of yajna. So that is a discussion for next verses from 24 till it's a quite a few verses are there. 25 till 33. So it defines yajna. So after describing how to act on the transcendental platform, Krishna describes a variety of sacrifices because the ultimate goal of these sacrifices is transcendental knowledge, which is the theme of this chapter. Sacrifices has already been discussed in Bhagavad Gita 3:9-16, where Krishna explained that without sacrifice for Vishnu, one cannot live happily in this world. Now we are coming to the sacrifice, and there are different sacrifices that have been described. So I will just summarize the process of sacrifices. We are not going into all the details. One is worship of the demigods. It's a kind of sacrifice. Clear? The worship of the demigods is a kind of sacrifice. Then sacrifice into the impersonal Brahman. 24th verse, I think. Sacrifice in 26th verse. Sacrifice into the impersonal Brahman. That is by the process of jnana. That is the process of philosophical speculation. That is another kind of sacrifice. Then higher, of course, Prabhupada mentioned higher sacrifices. What is the highest yajna? Standing. It is Krishna consciousness. Activities in different consciousness. That is the highest yajna. And there are different sacrifices according to different varnashram. For brahmacharis is given, what is the sacrifice? It is study, it is shraddhavyad. That is hearing. The proper the process of hearing. So that is a sacrifice for brahmacharis. And for grihasthas it is charity. It is specifically mentioned as using the sense objects in the service. That is different paraphernalia when we actually use in service of Krishna. That is charity. It is considered charity. That is yajna. So according to Varnashram also there is two kinds of charities, two kinds of sacrifices that have been described. Then we are moving ahead. Again, the four kinds of different sacrifices are again described. One is Dravya Yajna, Tapo Yajna, Yoga Yajna, Swadhyaya. Four kinds of sacrifices. One is Dravya Maya Yajna means
money.
All the material possessions using for a higher cause. Generally, ultimately, it is for the sake of Krishna. So that is Dravya Maya Yajna. Then Tapo Maya. Tapamaya, yeah, exactly, the performing austerities. Srila Prabhupada gives an example of performing Chaturvasya Vrata and Chandrayaan in the different Vratas is given, where people have to go through different austerities. So that is Tapamaya. And then Yoga Yajna. Yoga Yajna is Ashtanga Yoga, Dhyana Yoga. And finally, it's given Swadhyaya. Swadhyaya means study of the Vedic literature. So these are another four kinds of sacrifices that have been described. It should be 20. I'll give you 27. Dravya Yajna, Tapo Yajna, Yoga Yajna, 28. That is 28. Then 29 gives a description of further description about the Ashtanga Yoga, how one is actually controlling the breath, and in that way how one is performing the yajna. So that is 29. And 23 and the 30th verse actually Krishna gives what is the ultimate purpose of this yajna. Krishna says all these performers who know the meaning of the sacrifice become cleansed of sinful reactions, and having tasted the nectar of results of sacrifices, they advance toward the supreme eternal atmosphere. So what is the culmination of transcendental, culmination of all this yajna, sacrifices? Ultimately what one gets? Yes, that is 1.1. One will be cleansed by the sinful reaction, and also one gets transcendental knowledge. So transcendental knowledge. So that's the ultimate. The aim of sacrifices, whatever we have described, is getting transcendental knowledge. So in other words, this is actually giving a means to get transcendental knowledge. Because this chapter is about transcendental knowledge. And without sacrifice, one cannot be happy in this life or in the next. Any questions so far? Yes, no? Okay. Now we are getting into the last section, that is 34 to 42. The important of this section is the beginning itself. Krishna gives the direct process by which we can get transcendental knowledge that you may be knowing. How did you get transcendental knowledge, Vishesh Prabhu? How did you get spiritual knowledge? What is the direct? You started a practice, then you got spiritual knowledge, did you? Or? Okay, good. So you didn't do actually any sacrifice. Before that you got some knowledge, is that right?
Pretty much.
You didn't go through any Dravyamaya or Tapomaya or Yogamaya, Swadhyaya. You didn't go through any of these things, but still you got transcendental knowledge. So Krishna says, how one can get transcendental knowledge? Krishna, what Krishna says? Approach a spiritual master. So that is an important verse from 4th chapter. Tatsisi pranibhatena pariprasena sevaya tadashindriya jnanam jnanam tatsulasina. So Prabhupada mentioned, this is one of the most important verses in Bhagavad Gita. Which is the most important verse? And devotees are replying. Devotees are telling, it is surrender unto me. Who said no? This is more it is very important. Because from there one can actually start making spiritual progress. And one can actually surrender unto Krishna. So this verse is so important. So that is 34, how to get transcendental knowledge. It's 36, rather. 36? 34, yes. 34. Mm. Then onwards, this chapter towards the end, Krishna is giving the glories of transcendental knowledge. So that is very interesting. Glories of transcendental knowledge. Point number one, after getting this knowledge, one will not fall down into the material pool. One will not fall into the illusion. One who is firmly fixed in transcendental knowledge, spiritual knowledge, then one will not fall down to the material pool, to the material illusion. So that is one glory of this. Second, Krishna says, just like the fire burns the firewood into ashes, in the same way, the fire of knowledge will burn all the sinful reaction into, it will remove, eradicate all the sinful reactions. And can you tell me what is that knowledge? Yeah, it is transcendental knowledge, but what is that transcendental knowledge? For what extent? It's important, very important to know that. What is the transcendental knowledge actually that can burn all the sinful reactions? Exactly. The knowledge of the self, knowledge of the super self, and the relationship. Or in other words, in simple terms, understanding that we are eternal servant of Krishna. With this knowledge, actually one can eradicate all the sinful reactions. Because if we want firmly understand this knowledge, then one starts acting with this knowledge. So that is another verse, it's coming up. That is said, only with the action of this knowledge, only by the application of this knowledge, one can actually solidify this knowledge and one can actually come to the faith. And before that, what are the prerequisites to get this knowledge? One is faith and second is sense control. To get transcendental knowledge, two things are required. One is faith, second is control of the senses. Can we relate to this? That's the reason we are following four regulative principles. And we are trying to develop faith. And Srila Prabhupada mentioned, how can we develop faith? Very simple formula Prabhupada gives in the same purpose. One point is chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. And also engage in devotional service. Prabhupada says, if you do this, you develop faith. And also we know, we can associate with people who have faith. That is also give us some faith. So important. And those who have doubt, there is no hope. That's what Krishna says. If you see verse number 40. But ignorant and faithless person who doubt the revealed scriptures do not attain God consciousness. They fall down. For the doubting soul, there is happiness. For the doubting soul, there is happiness neither in this world nor in the next. Okay. So, what's our hope? What should you do? Krishna gives the answer in the next verse. Krishna says, by one can develop faith. Okay, we can actually firmly situate in this knowledge. Actually, by applying this transcendental knowledge, by acting in devotional service. So Krishna says in the next, one who acts in devotional service, renouncing the fruits of his action, and whose doubts have been destroyed by transcendental knowledge, is situated factually in the self. Thus, he is not bound by the reaction of work or conqueror of the riches. So, action in devotional service is considered very important. It's not enough, you know, everything in the head, but it should come into action. And after concluding everything, Krishna is telling, now you get up and fire. Alright. So far everything okay, reasonable? Understood first chapter reasonably? Reasonably? Alright. Yes, okay, he has some doubts. It's okay, don't worry. About that verse, don't worry so much about that verse. You can ask the doubts still. Questions, there are questions, yeah.
I was just thinking, if the people, if you completely down and how, because it seems like even if they do, like, they might end up doing some service or hanging with the ladies, they still have no faith in that truth.
They don't have a proper faith.
Yeah. Like, when some of them try to suppress their faith, they might come in and help, and then they disappear.
They have a slight faith. Yes, you know, at least a very tiny, it's called Komala Sata, tiny amount, maybe less than Komala, maybe. That is, they think, you know, these people are alright, tell me. You know, just try to see them, or let me try to do something.
Maybe it's really
interesting to you,
example of a
wood,
the dry wood, the
semi-dry wood. Yes, yeah, fine, it's a good example as well. So, one has to actually gain faith to come to devotional service. With that faith, one cannot be situated firmly in devotional service, for sure. So one has to gain faith. So usually faith comes from chanting, devotional service. So when he does a little bit of devotional service, without knowledge, agyata sukriti, their faith is a little bit increasing. They hear holy names, maybe from Harina, maybe from close place, maybe coming to the temple, wherever. Then their faith is increasing a little bit. So even to start devotional service, they need to have a little bit amount of faith so that they are ready to accept what devotees are saying. When you say, okay, please Prabhu, start chanting, somebody should have enough faith to accept that and to start chanting. So that faith is important. Oh, it's a very interesting commentary regarding that. I'll just read that. The ajna is foolish like the animal. The ashradhavanda has knowledge of Shastra, but having seen the mutual disagreement of proponents of various theories, he has no trust in any one of them. Although the samshyatma has faith, he is swayed by the doubts. I don't know whether the process will be effective in my case. Doubters have some faith, but they nevertheless doubt the following shastra will truly award results. Okay, so the role of the doubters are, they have some faith, but they are doubting. There is a difference between somebody who has got little bit of faith and doubters. Both has faith, but the doubting person, he, even though he has that bit of faith is there, but with that faith he is continuously doubting the process. Whether will I get or not? Will I get or not? That doubt is very strong. So then what happens? It's mentioned. Doubters have some faith, but nevertheless, doubt following Shastra will truly award results or not. They will follow, they will thus follow, but without full faith, hope and optimism, such doubters achieve happiness neither in this world nor in the next. Even fools attain some material happiness. Doubters attain none. Okay. Someone should come beyond, at least from the doubting platform regarding Shastra. Everyone should understand, okay, this will work. Maybe my application is wrong, maybe my understanding is not perfect, but at least it will work. That faith you have to develop. We have to develop. Otherwise, if we have a doubting tendency, it is very difficult. People fall down actually. We have seen devotees who develop this kind of doubt. That is, you know, they come to Krishna consciousness, even they establish themselves in Krishna consciousness. You know, they are practicing devotees. But then, maybe moon landing, or finished. You know, the doubts are coming in on, maybe Shastra is not right. Maybe this is not right. Maybe something went wrong in the moment. If one devotee fell down immediately, oh no, the process is not working, the doubts are coming. Then again, you see the scandal of Bhagavatam, you say some statements regarding some other part of the world. Like, you know, the moon planet, or from the, you know, different Narakas, or, you know, other planetary systems and different things, and start developing doubts. You know, the whole doubt is whether it is true or not, you know, whether will I get result, you know, this seems to be not right. So, when that doubting propensity comes, it's not question, you know, there is a difference between question and doubt. You understand that clearly, you know. If you doubt is a bit negative by itself, the term question is question, that's it. So, that kind of doubt creates, it actually shakes the devotional service. And while when with that doubt one is performing that devotional service, they have even to be happy, we can see they have very difficulty in performing devotional service, and many cases they fall down. That kind of doubt, serious doubt, can actually cause fall down. So there is no happiness, because even while performing the devotional service they are doubting the process. So there is no happiness in this life, because they are performing, still there is no happiness. And it's a foolish mention, because the bliss, as it is said, ignorance is bliss. You know, it's complete ignorance. So their ignorance is bliss. Very, very nice. No problem. Whether Shastra is there or not, we are alive or not, we are happy. Next life doesn't matter. Party and be happy. Good. Eh? Yes, another formula. Different mantras for sense gratification. So one can apply to one of these mantras and be happy. So that is ignorant fool. Fool's happiness. We have to do actually two more things. And time is running quite tight. One is we have to go a quick overview of the fifth chapter. I'm telling the agenda for the day. Actually what we are supposed to do at least. And second is we had to go through the yoga ladder. Which one? The same thing?
The same thing, the way we are doing.
People can't understand. How is it so far? Is it?
It's very intense now.
It is intense enough, yeah, because we went through the whole fourth chapter. Okay.
How long have we got now?
We can go for. You know, we won't be able to finish. I'm not planning to. Whatever I told, I'm sure we won't be able to complete the whole thing. Do you have the energy for the fifth chapter? We don't have to go to each and every verse, but it has at least how many sections? We are actually lagging behind. Now the issue is We'll have to catch up at some point. Before December, we have to finish. Before December, we had to finish Necro Devotion. So that was the break point. So when can we have the extra class?
So,
yeah.
So, Saturday,
what time? Same time is not possible. We have Bhakti Vaibhav, at least I have Bhakti
Vaibhav.
But you go on book, do you? Only possible Saturday is only possible. If you need an extra class, it will be in the evening.
Seven.
I don't have trouble at 7 o'clock. How many of you have trouble on
7?
Even 6 also. Bhakti Vishya, who is going for Bhakti? Are you going for Bhakti? You going for Bhakti? Yes. Because we had to cover quite a bit. I'll tell you, this lesson we are supposed to do 5th chapter and the yoga ladder. This will be intense. Other options, I had to go very briefly in the 5th chapter. Or in the 4th chapter, I could have done that. I went a little bit elaborate. Other options, I can go fast. You will understand what I'm saying.
Not fast.
Not fast. But then you come with who wants today a little bit extra? Who has service? You have service. Maybe we will have
service.
Okay, for that, okay, we had to go a little bit ahead then today. We had to go to the otherwise we won't be able to finish. Even next class lesson, that is also there, no? And we had to give a break and then we all come prepared. We'll have a longer session next week.
What about the Saturday?
Yeah, that's right, you know, we had to catch up a little bit. Otherwise, you know, we'll be in trouble. So, you know, we can't run very well. Which one? 12 to 5 is not possible. It's too long. It's not possible. No, Saturday, who has trouble with Saturday? Tell me.
Actually,
evening. Who has trouble? You are working?
Yes.
Okay.
What is working?
No, evening only. There is the only option we have is evening.
Evening, I don't
know. Hey, you can swap, yeah. It's an option.
Just one Saturday is alright, but not every Saturday.
No, I'm not talking about every Saturday. I'm talking about one Saturday. Okay, I'll give you a call. I will let you know about this Saturday. Okay, I'll just talk to other people, or to those who haven't come, those who can come. So we had to go further a little bit, because otherwise, you know, okay, I will start with the 5th chapter, because it is a continuation. So what we discuss in 4th chapter? What was the first section?
Krishna,
yes, that's right, Krishna. Transcendental knowledge about the whole chapter is, what is the whole chapter is title?
Knowledge.
Yeah, good. And it is a knowledge about?
Krishna,
good. So that was the first? That is the first section. And we understood how this knowledge was lost. Is it right? We understood how this knowledge was first spoken and how it was lost. Fair enough. Then what did we understand in that section? Any other points? 1 to 10 verses? Yeah, Krishna's home is eternal and he is unchangeable, more precisely unborn. Yes, good. Then what else? Yeah. Okay, his reason for his appearance is good, and when he comes, very good. Alright, so that is okay. And then many people have achieved perfection by giving up different kinds of attachments. Prabhu was pointing out the three kinds of attachments, which is the power of the backward, it's interesting. And then when we come to the next section, 11 to 15.
Krishna is
not everyone can, yeah, that is a general statement. Everyone can get Krishna, that's fine. But what is mentioned in that section? Okay, we will come to Varnashram. Before that, what we discussed? Reciprocation, the principle of reciprocation with Krishna. Which is that verse? Yes? Yatha, ma, prabhadyate. You know the full verse? Okay, then learn that. Okay, so that is how Krishna is reciprocating to us, to devotees, how Krishna is reciprocating to the devotees in the spiritual world, how Krishna is reciprocating to Brahmavadis, how Krishna is reciprocating to Paramahavadis, how Krishna is reciprocating to Mayavadis. Okay, so the whole thing. So that is done. Yes, Prabhu. 11. Yes, I'm a Prabhupada. Okay, then people don't want to go to Krishna. When whom they go? They go to the nearest Ganesh temple. Okay. So that is the next verse. And they started throwing coconuts. Coconuts everywhere happens. Is it right? So what they get? They get the result very fast. So that's the reason they are going. But Krishna is telling still, I'm not involved in your happiness or distress. I'm not the reason, direct reason for your happiness or distress. And he is placing the Varnashram system in front of us and he is telling, I have created this Varnashram system, but I am not the doer. It means you are the doer. Okay. Krishna is indicating, okay, you are the doer. It's not me, it's you. So it's blaming us rather than taking the blame upon him, because he's not the, he hasn't done anything wrong. Okay, that is the next section. Then what is the end of 15? Very interesting statement at the 15th verse. What is that? We have to understand. Exactly. Krishna is telling Arjuna, okay, following the footsteps of the liberated souls. Then what should Arjuna do? You should perform your duty. Alright. And after that, 16:24, what is talking about?
Karma Yoga.
Karma Yoga. Karma Yoga. In simple understanding, what is Karma Yoga? What is Karma Yoga?
Looking at my face.
What is Karma Yoga? That's okay, I might test. What is Karma Yoga?
Karma Yoga is action.
Yes, it is action. Then, if I am playing football, is it Karma Yoga?
Oh, action is Krishna consciousness.
Okay, good. Action in Krishna consciousness. What does that mean? Do what you say. In simple words, activity giving to, the results of the activity giving to Krishna. Okay, so that is Karma Yoga. So that Karma Yoga is described in the 16 to 24 verses. And in that, one important thing that we can remember is, first of all, the classification is given. Is that clear? Okay, good. Then after that, okay, that is a confusing part, isn't it? Inaction in action and action in inaction. So what is inaction in action? Okay. You nodded your head very deeply, so very full force. So what is inaction in action? Okay, your hand is always up, so I laugh after that. Okay, probably you want to say, what is inaction in action? Okay, hold on, everyone. Calm down. Think. Inaction in action. Okay, first of all, what is inaction? Okay, good. Okay, so Krishna conscious activities is inaction. So Krishna conscious activities are inaction. So inaction in action. In other words, devotion service in action.
Action.
Okay, that's try to replace that. So what does that mean?
Devotion service is inaction.
That is inaction. That itself is inaction. Because we know that devotion service is inaction. And the devotion service involves action because we are not sleeping all the time. Is it right? You know, we are not meditating all the time. We have action to do. Is it right? We are doing so many things. If we are not, start doing something. So that is inaction in action. Is that clear? Now everyone can say, Prabhu, what is inaction in action?
Why still we say it is inaction? Exactly. Okay, you understood it. Good. It's clear for you. Okay, now who is the next? Who wants to explain? Okay, he's trying very hard, Prabhuji. So okay, what is action in an action then?
The impersonation to try to reject.
Yeah.
Because the senses ask them to gratify the senses, that they will do.
Okay, that's fine. I'm just going the full spectrum. Okay, leave it there. Now, action in inaction. So, explain me with respect to impersonalist, where is that inaction?
Doing no action.
But what they do actually? And why we say there is action in that inaction? Still they have to? Yeah, that's right. Still they have to use their senses because they have to live in this world. They are not dead bodies. So they have to do something. Okay. So that is action in inaction. For everybody is clear, no? Action in action, inaction in action. If you wake up middle of the night and if you ask what is action in action, action in action, will you able to tell? Alright, it's fine? That one is clear? I hope so. At least now it is clear for me. Thank you. Now, okay, that's good. Then, important statement, that is, for a karma yogi, even though he is endeavoring in all different respects, he is taking so many undertakings, his activities are not impelled by desire for sense gratification. It is a samahu panditam buddha. So that is a very high thing, you know, if you think about it. They are active, but there is no question of desire for sense gratification. There is not at all. So that is nishkama karma yoga, because there is no desire. Nishkama, there is no attachment to the result. Yeah, so that's actually a very interesting statement that I'm actually quoting. There's actually a nice verse stating that. Bhukti mukti siddhi kami sakale ashanta. Bhukti mukti siddhi kami sakale ashanta. That the devotee can be shanta. He can be peaceful. He can, you know, without any, is undisturbed by this kind of desire. But who is after sense gratification? Bhukti. Definitely he is troubled. Because bhukti means he has all the desire. Mukti, because he has the desire. Because he wants to solve all the problems of this world. He wants to get out. And siddhi, siddhi means the material perfection. So due to that, even they are ashanta. They are completely, they are disturbed because of their desire. So that desire part is strong in them. Whereas for a devotee, no, it's different. Okay. Any other points from Karma Yoga section? Yes, Prabhuji. Anything to think about? What? Yeah, they just work to maintain the body, the minimum work. And also one point, another point in the next verse I'll be given. In with respect to your devotees, that is in the verse 22, I suppose. That is, he who is, we didn't discuss that actually, who is satisfied with gain which comes of its own accord, he is free from duality and does not envy, who is steady in both success and failure, is never entangled, although performing actions, will now be. Okay, that's it. Can you see that statement? He who is satisfied in gain and whatever comes by its own accord. And in the surrender to me, there is a nice example of Madhavendra Puri is given. Madhavendra Puri, when he went to Vrindavan, he was not working. Okay, of course, you know, the renowned order, they don't work at this. And one activity is allowed is begging is allowed for maintenance in the renounced order. But Madhava Dravari was not even begging. Means he was not bothered about eating. Then who came? Krishna came in the form of as Gopal. Gopal came and what he gave? Milk. He gave milk. I think it was in front of Govinda Kund in Vrindavan. Not in Vrindavan, in Govardhan. In Govardhan, in front of Govardhan, there is a Madhavendra Puristan that place is still there, there is free and all. So there Gopal actually gave milk to Madhavendra and Madhavendra drank them. So that is complete dependence on Krishna. He is not actually endeavoring for maintaining even the body. In one level, okay, he is working to maintain the body on a minimal level. Here is a Siddha who is perfect, he is not even bothering about that. And then Krishna is directly taking care of such a devotee. Okay, very exciting. Interesting. Okay, that's another point. We can go into that maybe in the next class. Yes, in one sense we can say, yes, we are bhakti yogis. We can say we are karma yogis as well. But we have to understand in the right context. I'll write down that question. We will use it in the next. You want to ask that question for the next class? Wherever in the next extra session we have, we will discuss on that point, because that often creates a bit of confusion within us and with everyone else. So we should discuss that. Please remember that question. Okay, so you had a
question. Yeah, like,
yep.
And then, so this lady is living in positive pain, and she started talking to me, and then she ended up taking a Krishna book for me for 3 or 4 times. So if you just do your time, and you'll be fine, this is what they use to keep
me.
I think that it's a wise conception that probably gave a picture of things.
Yeah, there is a general understanding about Bhagavad Gita. Many people, I also used to think that Bhagavad Gita means karma. Karma means do your duty. Work hard or study or whatever. Then you can see so many karma yogis. You go on the street, you can see people working hard from morning till night. And you know, who are working 24 hours. You can see how many people. That is in the category of, that Prabhu was saying, dogs, cows and camels. It's a different category. They are not karma yogis. This is karmis, means who are attached to the fruits of their action and they are working so hard for them. So yeah, this is a common misunderstanding. Very, very much. You will hear that all the time. Okay, I'll just briefly go through the 23 and 24. Just to start with that yajna part, and we are going to the end. That is, the work of a man who is unattached to the modes of nature and who is fully situated in transcendental knowledge merges entirely into transcendence. 23. And from 25 till 33, it was about yajna sacrifice, which is actually, it's pretty clear, isn't it? It is, you know, it's pretty straightforward. Sacrifice of demigod to the impersonal Brahman. For Brahmachari, what is the sacrifice? For the Grihastha, what is the sacrifice? Then the four other kinds of sacrifice, Dravya Yagya, Tapo Yagya, Yoga Yagya, Swadhyaya. And next section, what is the ultimate? What is the culmination of sacrifices? That is ending and what is the mature fruit of sacrifice? Transcendental knowledge. So that is a very important point. And then it gives the glories of transcendental knowledge. What are the glories of transcendental knowledge?
One will not fall down.
Exactly, one will not fall down back to the illusion. Point number one. Another? The sinful reactions are burned just like the fire is burning the firewood. Okay, very good. Anything else? Any prerequisite to gain this knowledge?
Faith
and sense control. Good. Then, how about the doubters? What will happen to the doubters? No hope. Alright, not in this life, nor in the next. Now, to remove doubt, what to do?
Two-headed Krishna master.
we missed that verse actually. To gain the transcendental knowledge, before that, to gain the transcendental knowledge, what's the direct process? No, to gain transcendental knowledge, what's the direct process? Approach a spiritual master. Okay? Approach a spiritual master. Alright, approach the spiritual master, that's good. Then finally, to remove the faith, what is that 41? What is the process method described? Huh? Some action in devotional service. The beginning of the verse is action in devotional service. So, after knowing everything, what should Arjuna do now?
Fight.
Do your duty. Okay, Krishna is saying, do your duty, do your prescribed duty. So, the chapter is finished. Alright, so now we are going to chapter 5. Everything okay, comfortable with chapter 4?
Yes.
Reasonable understanding? Koti Prabhu, first class, so how are you here? Okay, alright. Jay Prabhu, okay? Didn't talk anything, so.
I hope. I wanted to listen.
Alright. Pretty correct. But we will get to that in the next. We will discuss a bit details on all those things next. In the yoga ladder, we have to analyze this. Are we karma yogis or are we bhakti yogis? How do we classify all these kind of things? Intricate. Actually, yoga ladder, in one sense, it is pretty straightforward explaining. In one sense, it is quite straightforward explaining. But on the other sense, it has a lot of intricacies. In terms of Bhagavad Gita. If you try to understand yoga ladder straight from Bhagavad Gita, it can become a little difficult. It's a bit tricky. So, I want to actually go through. So, next class, better not to miss. Because, it can become a little tricky. Okay. Now, we'll go to 5th chapter. At least 2 sections we can cover in 5th chapter and then we can leave it to the next. Alright? Okay, somebody who hasn't read, Jay Prabhu hasn't read anything. So, Jay Prabhu can read the first summary of the first section of chapter 5 and the chapter title as well.
Chapter 5, Karma Yoga.
Yeah.
In this chapter 4, the Lord told Arjuna that all kinds of sacrificial work are coming tomorrow. But at the end of chapter 4, the Lord advised Arjuna to wake up and fight, being situated in the first knowledge. Therefore, first by simultaneously stressing the importance of both gods in devotion and connection in knowledge, Krishna has perplexed Arjuna and confused his reasoning.
Okay.
So, just a question.
Yes, bro.
So, Krishna consciousness we just discussed is in action. And here we have come with action in action.
You had to understand from the context. You had to understand from the context. It's a common sense. Now, there is a confusion here. Why? Because Arjuna had a confusion. So you can read the 1 to 6 what the okay, so in the first question itself, you know, Krishna, Arjuna is asking which is better, renunciation or action in Krishna consciousness or devotional service. So Prabhupada gives in that purport, Prabhupada very nicely gives the series of philosophies or themes which were running in previous chapters. So in the second chapter, we have already given the knowledge that we are not the body, we are the spirit soul, and also introduced the concept of buddhi yoga, which is again action, it's a devotional service. Then in the third chapter, the karma yoga is described, and how the soul is actually getting covered, that is described, that is the last. Then in the fourth chapter, the whole chapter is about transcendental knowledge. Initially the knowledge about Krishna, then about karma yoga, then again the sacrifice, then how the sacrifice is leading to culminating in transcendental knowledge, and then the glories of transcendental knowledge. So the whole thing was about, the whole theme running in the fourth chapter is transcendental knowledge. However, in the last verse, like the 42nd verse of fourth chapter, Krishna is telling, now you get up and fight. So Arjuna became confused, because the whole thing was about jnana, about the whole knowledge was given, and now Krishna is asking fight. So apparently it looks contradictory. That's the reason for confusion. That's the reason Arjuna is confused. So Prabhupada says Krishna has never had any interest in confusing Arjuna, but he was confused. Or in other words, we can see he was confused for our benefit. For our benefit, so we can understand more about it. So Krishna says in the second verse, the renunciation of work and work in devotion are both good for liberation, but of the two, work in devotional service is better than renunciation of work. Yes.
This is mentioned in 4.41 also, you know, when we, how we came to fourth chapter, when he says, Krishna says that you have to act.
Yes.
So he is mentioning the fact that you have to act.
You have to act, yes.
So what is the confusion there?
Oh, the confusion is all the sacrifice ultimately leads to what? Even Karma Yoga was presented 16 to 24, I suppose, and then sacrifice is given. Both sacrifice, it has an element of action is there. Element of action is there in that theme is running. But what is the end result of that? Transcendental knowledge. So originally, what is the meaning of jnana? By principle, by default, jnana means, one who is in jnana means he can actually doesn't have to do anything. A jnani can renounce the activities and he can, basically he doesn't have to do an action for Krishna or anyone. He is actually, you know, his senses are not engaged in that sense. So that is the meaning of jnana, or that's the meaning of sannyas. What are in the verse also says, you know, the fifth chapter, first verse, sannyasam karma yogam cha punar yogam chesam satri yachrayam yadayaregam tanne bohi sunishayam. The sannyasam, the word itself is used as sannyasam, that is renunciation. Isn't it? Sannyasam. So the word itself is sannyasam, that is renunciation. So jnana is actually corresponding to sannyas or renunciation. So that is the reason it is confused. That is the reason there is a confusion in that. So if Arjuna is a sannyasi, why he should fight? Is it a valid question? If he is situated in a jnana, in the transcendental knowledge, he can be a sannyasi, he can be a renouncer, and a renouncer by default means he doesn't have to fight. He doesn't have to fight. And at the same time, Krishna is telling, fight. So there is a confusion. And it's a very, very straightforward contradiction. So that reason there's a confusion. Okay.
So
in the surrender unto me, there is a nice statement. Both work and renunciation have the same goal. Okay. But of the two, detached work is safer, easier, and more practical. Safer, easier, and more practical. And you should be able to tell why. Why? Who can tell why? Okay, listen, Prabhu. Exactly. The mind and the senses need some engagement. So if we actually understand everything, and there is no plane to work on, so one has to do activity, which then the activity is a nonsense activity. Because there is no devotion service. So the activity he has to do with is a nonsense activity. So better don't take that risk, rather engage in the devotion service. Then Baladeva Vidyabhushan says, working in the renunciation strengthens one's knowledge. So in that sense also it is good. So it's actually a direct connection to the previous chapter. That is, if one acts in knowledge, it actually strengthens our knowledge. Why? Again, why? If we act in knowledge with renunciation, how it strengthens our knowledge? Develop faith. That's right. How we develop faith? Due to what factor we develop faith? If we act in renunciation with knowledge, it actually strengthens the knowledge. So Prabhu said, it develops faith. How we develop faith? No. What is that? It improves the knowledge. So when we act in devotion service, for instance, when we act in devotion service, what we gain?
Realization.
Exactly, we gain realization. And with the realization, our knowledge increases. It means that knowledge become realized knowledge rather than theoretical knowledge, it becomes realized knowledge. So when we have theoretical knowledge, with action we are getting realized knowledge. And when we have the realized knowledge, naturally our faith is increased. So that's the reason it's mentioned. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, it's a good point, yeah. You know the story, no? That is just with the devotional service. The scholar came and he was from the Benares Hindu University. He was a big scholar, big time scholar, and he had nobody else to actually clarify the questions he had. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was the greatest of the scholars of that time, and he approached him. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, I'm a bit busy now, so please go and help these brahmacharis who are cleaning the paraphernalia. So the scholar was quite humble, so he went and he just started cleaning the paraphernalia, and he didn't say anything. And after 1-2 hours, he asked the brahmachari, can you ask that scholar to come, can come and meet me, and you can ask the philosophical question. So the scholar came and he said, I have no more questions. It's already clarified with him. And it's the power of devotional service. The action actually given to the whole, the heart is purified and the answer was automatically given to him. Yeah, that's a good point. One who neither hates nor desires the fruits of activities is known to be always renounced. Such a person, free from all dualities, easily overcome material bondage and is completely liberated. O mighty armed Arjuna. Okay. So Nitya Sannyasi. Okay, now there is a very interesting analysis, next two verses. That is a comparison between the Karma Yoga and the Gyan. How both fit in. And we saw the both sides. One is Gyan with renunciation and Karma, that is the devotional service. How both are fitting in. How both are not different. Next verse is actually telling both are actually same. Both are giving the same result and both are the same. So Srila Prabhupada very nicely explains how it is possible. He says, the translation is, only the ignorant speak of devotional service, Karma Yoga, as being different from the analytical study of the material world, Sankhya. Those who are actually learned say that he who applies himself well to one of these paths achieves the results of both. So both, it means both have the same result. How? Prabhupada explains, the soul of the material world is Vishnu, or the super soul. Devotional service to the Lord is actually service, directly serving the super soul, directly serving Krishna. Whereas in the Sankhya is finally analyzing to find what's the root. It is just like one is devotional service is watering the root of the tree, and the process of Sankhya or the analytical study is finding where is the root. So once they find the root, they have to actually water the root. In that sense, both are same. Apparently the processes are different, but ultimately both are meant to come to the root, and both meant to come to water the root. In that sense, both are same. Is that clear? Then next is continuing on the same point, that is, whatever position achieved by devotional service, the same position can be achieved through the analytical, the Sankhya process also. So Prabhu says, by Sankhya philosophical research, one comes to the conclusion that a living entity is not a part and parcel of the material world, but of the Supreme Spirit Soul. Consequently, the Spirit Soul has nothing to do with the material world. His action must be same relation with the Supreme. When he acts in Krishna consciousness, he is actually his constitutional position. In this first process, Sankhya, one has to become detached from matter, and in the devotional yoga process, one has to attach himself to the work of Krishna consciousness. Can you see, the point is, the Sankhya is the process of detachment. First one gets detached from matter, and then one can approach the Supreme. Whereas in devotional service, we are not taught detachment, rather we are taught how to develop attachment for Krishna, and by developing attachment for Krishna, naturally we get detached from the matter. So in that sense, both are the same. So Krishna is, you know, you see how Krishna is clarifying the both aspects, the jnana aspect as well as the devotional aspect, the karma and the jnana, how Krishna is telling one and the same, but why, how, very important to understand. Is clear? Any questions, anybody, any clarification required in this section? Okay, merely renouncing all activities, 5-6. So you want to read 5-6, the translation.
Merely renouncing all activities, yet not engaging in the devotional service of the Lord, cannot be a contradiction. But a thoughtful person engaged in devotional service can achieve the Supreme without delay.
Okay, so here, can you see, Krishna is exactly answering that point, that is, merely renouncing all the activities. Can you see that point? That's why Arjuna was confused. Merely renouncing all the activities. And in that Bhagavad Gita, Prabhu gives a comparison between a Vaishnava sannyasi and a Mayavada sannyasi. A Mayavada sannyasi, even though he is trying for spiritual perfection, he doesn't have proper engagement to his senses. Whereas a devotee, a Vaishnava sannyasi, he has full engagement for the senses because he is studying Srimad Bhagavatam and he is engaging in worshipping the deity and the similar services. So he has full engagement, whereas the Mayavadi, he is speculating on the commentary on Vedanta Sutra, Brahma Sutra by Shankaracharya, that is Charitika Bhashya. So he is on a speculative process and he cannot develop any taste in that process. We were studying in Srimad Bhagavatam, we were doing Bhakti Vaibhav. So one point of discussion was Srila Vyasadeva, he wrote about Brahma Sutra, about Vedanta Sutra. Even writing after Vedanta Sutra, he couldn't get satisfaction. So the one important point we analyzed was, one who is the writer of Vedanta Sutra, he himself couldn't derive any satisfaction after writing, then one who studies that, how can we expect him to derive satisfaction? So that is the point of a Mayavadi sannyasi. So then Prabhu mentioned, then since he doesn't have any basis, there is no satisfaction, then he comes to Srimad Bhagavatam and try to understand Srimad Bhagavatam and try to relish that. However, since he doesn't have a proper understanding, he will come to wrong conclusion. So that is the conclusion of this section. And we can go to the next section, because that is also very quite similar to what we discussed previously, because it is again Nishkama Karma Yogi. So far is clear, the fifth chapter, first section. The comparison between a renunciant, renouncing the action, and action in Krishna consciousness. How they fit in. Both are same in terms of the result, but at the same time, one is easier than the other because it is very practical and it is safe. Okay, Mr. Prabhu, you want to read the next section?
Description of Krishna and Karma Yogi, after describing the superiority of the devotional services,
Krishna explains how to work devotionally with detachment. One in knowledge of Krishna understands its incompatibility with the material nature and thus acts only for purification, giving the results of his work to Krishna. He thus will remain unattached, performing work as a natural being.
Okay. So in Nishkama Karma Yogi, he has full control over the mind and the senses. And very important point mentioned in the verse 7 is that he is very dear to everyone and everyone is dear to him. You can see for Prabhupada, you know, generally devotee, all the people were attracted to such a devotee, and he, for him everyone was dear also. Then one can ask a question, how about Arjuna? Arjuna is going to kill all his relatives, then how can he be very dear to them? Huh? What is that? Deliberate, okay, that's a good point. But the whole act of violence is mentioned, is described that that actually it's not a violence as such. It apparently looks like a fruitive activity, but it's not. It's on a transcendental platform because it is ordained by the Supreme Lord himself. So it doesn't actually affect in a material way. Then 8 and 9, it's actually very important verse because even for such a person, the basic activities are given. 8 and 9, if you see, the activities which are described, they are like, you know, touching, smelling, eating, moving about, sleeping, breathing, always know within himself that he is actually doing nothing. While speaking, evacuating, receiving, opening and closing the eyes, he is always know that only the material senses are engaged with the objects and that he is aloof from them. Can you see, for a Nishkama Karma Yogi, even the basic activities, these are the preliminary activities one has to perform to live in this world. You know, seeing, touching, evacuating, you know, moving about, one has to do that. Even one is performing that activity, still he is in full knowledge. That I am the spirit soul, I am not acting actually, but my body is acting. So he has that understanding. Tenth verse is an important, very very important verse in terms of Nishkama Karma Yoga. It gives the example of, it's a very very wonderful example of lotus flower. If actually a lotus leaf, patram. A lotus leaf, if it is in the water, does it get wet? No. Due to two reasons, apparently. One reason is, yeah, one exactly. One reason it is floating, means it is above water. What is the second reason? Exactly, it has a glossy kind of coating is there. Even if you pour water on it, it will just slide over like a bubble and it just goes away. So it cannot get wet. The same way in Nishkama Karma Yogi, a Brahmanyadhaya Karmabhi, Sangam Rekhtva, Karavakya, Lipyate Na Papayana Patmapatram Ivambhasa. That is, Brahmanyadhaya, whenever he is performing activity, he is giving that results to Brahmani, unto the Supreme Lord, Krishna. And Sangam Dektva, means he doesn't have no attachment whatsoever. So in that case, there is no question of reaction. Just like, even though he is involved in that activity, he is not getting any reaction. Just like a lotus leaf in the water. So we are almost finishing. Then one can ask one important question. That is, if one is getting no sinful reaction, then why should he work actually? Okay, the whole point of, what is the whole point of working? He's working, he's not attached to the self. And he's not getting any kind of reaction whatsoever. Then why is he working? Yeah, but still, why? Yeah, that was one reason before we discussed, but there is one more important reason.
Purification.
It was a trial, but it was alright. Purification. Sangam, it's for the purification. The yogi is abandoning the attachment, acts of the body, mind, intelligence and even with the senses only for the purpose of purification. only for the vacation. There's nothing else he needs. Alright. So now we are almost. Till what verse we have that section? 12? So one more. So this is actually giving a comparison. Next verse is final comparison. The steadily devoted soul attains unadulterated peace because he offers the result of all activities to me. Whereas a person who is not in union with the divine, who is greedy for the fruits of his labor, becomes entangled. So it's actually a conclusion in one sense. That is, if somebody, you know, two sides of the coin. If somebody is acting in karma yoga, what is the result? And if not, one is attached, what is the result? One is entanglement, one is liberation. Alright. I think we can stop here. Time is perfect. It's only 5 o'clock. Actually, there are other options, you know. One natural option is give a quick summary of the chapter. Quick summary of the chapter and go to Yoga Ladder. So I think you don't prefer that. You want to go. Is it right? Yeah.
In first year, we did the magic of why you did the first year.
Not necessary. That's the reason I could have given actually. I went a bit explicitly, but actually we don't have.
This is good.
This
is good.
We don't have to. We don't have to.
This was the old style.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it is old style. Okay, we are not running from the theme. Our theme is Yoga Ladder. We haven't touched it. So that is, we are nowhere actually in terms of the ideal thing I could have done is I could have actually given a summary in about half an hour of the chapter in, you know, few each section, a few sentences each, and summed up the chapter, and then we could have directly gone into the Yoga Ladder. But I didn't do that. So maybe we have already done two. We can quickly finish this chapter and then we can go through the Yoga Ladder and finish in next session. Hopefully before Sunday, if we can finish that, good thing. Sunday we have to have the next. It will be a bit intense. We should keep up with the reading, because otherwise it's going to be very difficult. In terms of you following a going to be fun. So next time we can easily finish the fifth chapter, because only next section is very important to discuss, 13 till 16, and after that there are two more sections which are relatively easy, 17 to 26, and then the last section. Fifth chapter is easy. One next section is very important to discuss, and we can quickly do that and go through the last section, understand the main concepts, and we can leave it there, and we can just focus on Yoga Ladder. Fine with everybody? Because Yoga Ladder is the theme of this lesson, and we haven't actually touched upon it. We'll do that. Not in the lesson 2. We are still in lesson 2, and next class we will be finishing lesson 2. And in the lesson 3, we will do the chapter 6. You have to note that in all the chapters, we did the chapter overview. Even with the theme, we were doing chapter overview. We did for chapter 1, we did for chapter 2. Remember? We did for chapter 3. We went through all the sections.
So we did
what are the practices of each yoga system that we did. It's good to we'll quickly finish fifth chapter and then we will get into the yoga. That is the part for next. So Saturday is okay for most of you, so we will see how it goes. What time is it?